Stephen and Money Ray. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Stephen. I listen to your show regularly. This is the first time I've phoned in. I was just wondering, you know the way it keeps going on and on about D-Stit and...
Now, he's not involved in the Carrickfergus situation, but it's the BBC's position that he is a leader of the UDA. Something that he denies, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, but Arlene Foster can't tell him to step down.
Well...
all I was wondering was... No, maybe she can't. I'm not saying she can't.
Well, think about that through. Think that through 1 second, Stephen.
Yeah.
Arlene Foster has a number of choices to make about D-Stit.
Yeah.
So she could say publicly, I believe Mr. Stitt should be the chief executive of Charter NI.
Yeah.
She could say, I believe Mr. Stitt should not be the chief executive of Charter NI. What would be to stop her saying either of those two?
That's what I think she should do. But the question I had was, if she can't, who is he? Who's above him? Who could tell him to step down, or why has?
Well, the board of Charter NI have could tell him to step down, and they have stood by Mr. Stitt throughout this.
That's what I was wondering, because many at another time an MP or whoever makes a mistake, and maybe a genuine mistake, and they automatically take it upon themselves to step down. You know, so I was wondering, he must have no sense, common sense. I mean, his position, you would nearly say, is bound to be untenable.
Stephen, thank you. Dawn, morning, Dawn.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Dawn.
I just about that, actually, that I think it's nonsense that the latest excuse, there's established case law, so you can't take D-Stit out of that position. Since normal employment law wasn't used to recruit him, we know that, then I don't see how it would apply to...
Well, we don't know that, actually. I've no idea how he was recruited as the CEO of Charter NI, and indeed they may have gone through normal employment law. My question this morning to the executive office is, would there be anything to stop Arlene Foster giving her opinion as our leader, as our First Minister, as to whether a leader of the UDA should be the CEO of a high-profile organisation like Charter NI?
Exactly. And we heard that he was given a final written warning. I wonder what the warning was and whether he's breached that warning since. If it's what he said in the interview to The Guardian, well then, what was he warned about? But I just feel really sad for the families living in that area, coming up to Christmas with their children, putting the Christmas tree up, and they have to live like this. And as you said, can you imagine an MP in, like, Finchley, for example, if this was happening, standing up and saying, oh, well, these people have control, that's the end of it. Basically, it's just not right, and we need leadership here. And where's the First Minister? What is she saying to those families and those people having to live in those conditions? I mean, where is she, and who's looking after those people who are trying to get on with their lives and living in these horrible conditions in this estate and everywhere else?
It's because we're not living in these areas that
Exactly, and it's not fair. It's not fair.
It's cosy for us to sit and talk about it rather than living among it, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's just not fair. Everyone's equal. If this was happening, Margaret Thatcher said a long time ago, Northern Ireland is as British as Finchley. So if this was happening in Finchley, can you imagine what the MPs and the politicians and the Prime Minister would be doing about it? They'd be giving leadership, and it would have to end, and they'd look after the people in those areas. And it's not happening, and it has to happen here. And you're right, everyone just keeps talking about it, but I'm just sad for those people.
The DP has promised, and Sammy Wilson himself has promised, that he will come on the programme this morning. I believe we've got him right now, actually. Here's the number, 03030 80 55 55. Sammy, good morning to you. What's your feel of how bad it is in that estate, Castlemar estate?
Well, I mean, first of all, Castlemar estate itself has been, and that area of Carrickfergus has been one where there have been problems for many, many years since I was elected to the area. There has always
Can you come
been
closer to your phone, Sammy? You sound like you're on speaker.
Sorry.
And we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me now? It's an area where there has always been a strong paramilitary presence. Many people believe that as the troubles receded, that paramilitary presence would be reduced. That has not been the case. And we have moved from paramilitary activity to criminal activity. I believe, Stephen, that the answer to any criminal activity has to, at the end of the day, be proper action by the police, the courts, and the people who are perpetrating these acts be dealt with accordingly.
You've said this morning, you said degree of control. You've said that the UDA has a degree of control of the Castlemara estate. What does that mean? What type of control do they have?
Well, I think that, first of all, could I just say to you that the vast, and I've canvassed Castlemara, I work with people who come into my office, etc. The vast majority of people in Castlemara don't want the kind of stigma which is attached to the area. They want to get on with their lives. You look at some of the houses in it, they've taken pride in their houses, have lived there since the estate was built. Many of them, and it's a good community. But when I say about control of the estate, what I mean is that there is a huge paramilitary influence. They involve themselves in criminal activity. They try to involve others in criminal activity.
Control means, course, though, we all know what control means, Sammy. It means they're ruling the roost.
And it also means, Stephen, that anyone who steps on their toes, and sometimes stepping on toes simply may mean that you cross them by saying the wrong thing or whatever, they feel that they've got the ability to punish those people.
And what do they do? Do they shoot them?
Well, people have been beaten, people have been put out, and of course there have been people shot, and other people, of course, as we have seen over the last number of months, are openly intimidated by shows of strength.
And you're calling the police out and them saying the way to resolve this is through mediation?
No, I'm not saying that the way to resolve it is through mediation.
No, the police are saying that, and you're objecting to that.
I think the police are wrong in that. First of all, I don't believe that, given the people who are involved in this present dispute, that there's any chance of mediation. That's the first thing. Secondly, mediation would kind of indicate that there's some degree of reasonableness here. There's not. And thirdly, I think that the police have got to recognise that there is deep criminal activity going on, and the expectation is that those criminals are dealt with.
Do you know who the UDA leader is in that area?
I think that everyone knows who's involved in the area. The main players, and in fact, you know, I think that in the past, there has been a fair amount of attention given to the activities of individuals, both by the police and by others.
But I know this sounds like a simplistic question, but it's one that many of our listeners ask. If everybody knows who the leaders of the UDA are in that area, why are they not arrested? It's against the law to be a leader. It's against the law to be a member of the UDA.
I suppose this is one of the things, Stephen, which I would say that, first of all, we've got to have a distinction between where there's evidence and where it is simply generally known in an area. I think that's the first. The second is that the police have to be inventive, as far as I'm concerned, in using the laws which are available to them. And if they believe, because you're quite right, leadership of an illegal organisation or directing an illegal organisation is a crime, there is law against it. And maybe what we need is for the police to look at the range of laws which are currently available to them and to use those laws. I mean, the government in the rest of the United Kingdom is now doing this with people who are involved in Islamic terrorism, for example. And I think that the police here have to look at the range of weapons which are available to them. And it worries me a wee bit. That although there's been good police work done. The police, I believe, do have an obligation to protect lives. That as a result of putting the resources in to protect lives, they have seized guns, they've seized drugs, They have arrested people. They have probably stopped a lot of these criminal gangs from being able to operate because of the presence in the area. But there are other things which I believe they should and could be doing to try and bring this to an end. And certainly talking nicely to people or mediating is not, to me, the social work answer is not the answer to this problem.
But that's what ACC Stephen Martin has said. One of the top policemen in Northern Ireland is saying mediation is the way to go.
Well, I think he's wrong on that. And I think, you know, sometimes of course there's a judgment which has to be made. But sometimes I think we have seen in policing in Northern Ireland that some police officers prefer to take the softly-softly approach. I think that when you're dealing with people who are as ruthless and as willing to bring on the kind of destruction which they have in their own community, then the law has to use the full weight which is available to it. And Stephen,
I think the police won't be happy with you this morning, Sammy.
Well, I'm not really too worried.
But here's why they'll not be happy with someone like you this morning, because it's their officers that go in and get intimidated and get hurt trying to protect this. They're going in on a daily basis. They have spent £1.6 million doing it in terms of policing, and they would very much object to you describing a police officer going into the middle of some of those thugs as a softly-softly approach.
Well, first of all, I'm not saying that a police officer going into the middle is a softly-softly approach. I'm saying that the tactical and strategic answer which the police has given, namely to try and go down through the route of some mediation, like some kind of social work project, is not the answer. And people might not like, some of the people in the police might not like that being said, but I believe that where the police are faced with the kind of problem that they're faced with in Castlemara and that kind of area, then they do have, they should be looking at all of the weaponry, the legal weaponry, which is available to them. And can I just say to you, you know, see, the longer this drift goes on, some time ago I discussed with the principal of the local school, who was concerned about the impact this was having on young Protestant males who live in that area, their school performance. He genuinely cares, wants to try and improve the area. And there's a whole range of other bodies that want to do the same, and they're held back if it is seen that that there are other ways in which people can make their mark, and I'm afraid that is what's happening. More people get recruited, get dragged into these kinds of things.
Let me, just use frank language. Are there some people, are you aware of some people in the area, because you will know the area well, who are community workers by day and paramilitary thugs by night?
No, I'm not aware of any who are actually community workers and who are involved in this kind of activity. But if they were and they were posing as community workers, I'd be the first to say that they should not be allowed to hold those positions of responsibility and therefore to gain a status which they shouldn't have in the area. Steve.
Okay. As part of the executive's paramilitary action plan, I noted that they said the PSNI has submitted a funding proposal to create an additional dedicated investigative capacity to tackle criminality linked to paramilitary groups. Now, when we've spoken to the police, they've said there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing about the budget. So the PSNI has actually put in a funding proposal to get more money to tackle paramilitaries, and the executive is to-ing and fro-ing with them about it?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not involved in any of the budgetary decisions or the budgetary discussions at the moment that is going on between the police and the executive. I do know from my own experience being the chairman of the General Purposes and Finance Committee on the Police Board when I was on the policing board and when I was finance minister, that, of course, in all budgetary discussions, there is to-ing and fro-ing, and there's people, when public money is involved, of course, you've got to look at what the money's going to be spent on, what business case has been put forward, what alternative sources of finance there might be available.
But why can't the police get the money they're asking for, to be fair to the police? Why can't they get it?
Well, I would say this, that any responsible finance minister would be asking the police, and tell us this, from the resources you have at present, how are those resources being used? Could they be redirected to this activity? Could different priorities be set before you grant any government department or any agency of government more money? You ask, and quite rightly would ask, how is the current money being spent, and are there different ways in which it could be spent and different priorities? So that's the normal process. And, you know, I would take it as a criticism of the executive if they were simply saying to people, right, your first bid is what we're going to give without asking any questions about it.
You said, Sammy, a matter of moments ago that if you knew of any community workers who were thugs by night, you would call it out. You would call it.
I would, yes.
Do you have an opinion about Dee Stitt and his position in Charter NI?
Well, first of all, I only know, all I know about Dee Stitt is what there has been in the media. And you know, if even half of what is being said in the media is true, then I think he's become a distraction from the good work which I know Charter have done in East Belfast, and there's good evidence of it, and Charter really have to address that. But that still should not...
A distraction is a carefully chosen word. Well, should he... Well, you know, Martin McGuinness has said that he should reconsider his position. Should Dee Stitt go?
Well, I think that if he cares about the image of the work which is being done by the organisation which he's involved in, then he should be asking himself, am I impeding this work? I think that secondly, Charter, because they're the ones who employ him, should be also saying...
Yes, but what do you think? What do you think?
Well, I've already told you, Stephen.
No, you've told me it's a distraction.
I do not believe that anyone who is involved in paramilitary activity and who is involved in actions which destroy their community should be tolerated in these kinds of positions. I have no difficulty, and I work with people in East Antrim here who at one stage were in the middle of wrecking their own communities, and either because of religious conversion or for some other reason, they have changed their way of going. They're now a positive influence in their community. And I don't delve into their past. I don't even ask about their past. I work with them on the basis of the positive work that they want to do now. And that's the attitude I would always take. But if somebody is trying to ride both horses, then I don't think it's right that they should be there.
What do we do next?
I can't be any blunter than that, Steve.
What do we do next, Sammy? What do we do? Or is this just going to be another story of paramilitaries wrecking and intimidating an area, and we all go back to our homes, and the people left in the area are left getting intimidated?
Well, Stephen, see if there's an easy answer to what we do next and how we get rid of this, then we would have already found it and already put it in place.
Well, how about this for a suggestion? How about that it feels in Northern Ireland like a zero-tolerance campaign against the paramilitaries? How about, you know, we've seen it happen with the mafia, haven't we, in other areas of the world, where a government has said, you know what, enough, we're coming after you, and we're coming after you big time, and you might have got away with it for years, but the tax people are now coming after you.
Right.
And we're doing raids, and it's going to be a sustained campaign. What about that?
And Stephen, I have no difficulty with that. Indeed, if you look at the kind of things that, for example, Ian Paisley and myself have been asking for at Westminster against those criminal gangs who are involved in tobacco smuggling, fuel laundering, etc. That's exactly what we have said. If you can't get them for their criminal activity because people are afraid to speak out or it's too difficult to gather intelligence, then go round the problem some other way and put them out of business in whatever way you have to do. And I think that, and don't forget, that was one of the recommendations of the task force, that yes, where people were prepared to change, work with them. Where they're not prepared to change, put them out of business.
And has it happened?
And that's the answer.
Has it happened?
Well,
is it happening?
No, and unfortunately, and you know, in the area of fuel laundering and tobacco smuggling, we have been very critical of the way in which the HMRC has been dilatory about this, and that's at a national level. So No, I don't think that it is happening as effectively as what it should. And therefore, I think that we've got to step up to it. And if it requires new legislation, and I know that there has been discussion in the light of the task force as to what extra legislation might be needed, then get the proper legislation in place. It's, again, that's not a quick process. And I know, Stephen, that in a world where we have we want everything instantly, sometimes people get frustrated with the slowness of the process, well, the law and lawmaking.
Yeah, but we've been talking about this, Sammy.
All I'm saying is that if...
I was talking to you about this type of stuff from the days of CityBeat 11 years ago.
And all I'm saying to you, Stephen, is that if the police and the other agencies come to the executive and say, we need additional powers, then the executive should be considering putting that legislation
through. The police have
put
a funding request in to tackle paramilitaries.
And I've told you that, you know, in any properly functioning executive and functioning assembly, whether it's a request for extra powers or a request for extra money, first of all, you test what available powers and what available money do you have at present.
Okay.
How are you using them? What priorities are you setting? If it can be shown then that the money is being used to the best of its ability and more is needed, then of course you grant it. If the powers are being used to the best of ability and more is needed, then you grant them it. But you know, you've got to examine how effectively the current powers are being used.
Fair
Otherwise,
enough.
You finish up with a situation where you simply add more money and more powers, but people still keep using the same actions and nothing's effective.
Final question. You suggested on Good Morning Ulster this morning a family being moved out of the area. What did you mean?
Well, one of the options that the police do have available to them is to say, and they do this in many other situations, is to say, look, given what is happening here, we cannot give you we cannot guarantee your safety, and therefore we believe that one of the options is to remove you
Remove them against their will,
where you can be safer. Well, in some cases, of course, the police do actually move people out of homes, whether people are reluctant to go or not, because they have deemed that they cannot keep them safe, and or that they're putting themselves in harm's way by trying to keep them safe. That is one option. My fear, and of course the other side of it, I know what you're going to say in that, the fear is that then the people who are doing the intimidation feel that they've won.
Exactly. But, they stay in the area and the innocent party are removed forcibly.
Well, I mean, don't forget, there's no innocent parties in this. These are two sets of people who have been involved in activities which have been damaging to their community and who have fallen out. So there's not innocent parties here. And my danger is that some of the innocent parties who live nearby are the ones who might suffer. It's one option which the police ought to be looking at.
Okay.
Of course, with all of these decisions, whether you decide to go in heavy, do you then alienate more people? Well, you decide to remove one side of the problem, does the other side feel that they win? Or whether you go for mediation, do you feel the people then say that police are being soft? There's none of these options, Stephen, which present you with ideal.
We're heading up to the news this morning. Anne in Carrickfergus has a question for you. Morning, Anne.
Yes, good morning.
Go ahead.
I would like to know what Sammy Wilson and the DUP are doing for the people of Castlemar and Glenfield?
Well, as far as the people in Castlemar and Glenfield are concerned, many of them come to my office. That's why I know how people feel on the ground. We have sought to deal with their individual problems. We have also sought to deal with the wider problems in terms of education, etc. So there's a whole range of things which are being done. And
are you happy with that, Anne?
No, I'm not.
Are
the DUP, the Alliance, and the Unionists, are they setting up groups, support groups, such as like Charter A&I? Are they setting them up to help the young people in Carrickfergus get into education, be educated, be trained for to go into employment? No, they're not. Sammy Wilson and his ilk, when something like this is going on, I don't know, maybe he hasn't been on the radio for too long, and he's decided.
Well, first of all, we asked Sammy to come on. No, we asked Sammy to come on. We asked him to come on. I can make that clear. Absolutely. And I'm not sure Sammy would be a big fan of the Nolan Show, so we asked him to come on, so we certainly won't be criticising him for coming on. It's an interesting question. It's an interesting question, actually, Sammy. Is there any...
They get on that radio, they get on into the newspapers, blah, blah, blah. They criticise Carrick Fergus, the people in Glenfield, the people in Castlemar.
Well, he's not doing that, is he?
Decent people live in both
those estates. Which is what he has said.
But
Sammy,
what is he doing for them? Absolutely nothing.
Sammy, it's an interesting question. Is there any social investment fund money going into your area, this area?
Well... There has been no social investment fund going into the area, but there are other funds, of course, and I have worked with groups both in Glenfield and in the area to get funding for the very good work which PACT and others do in the area. So there are groups who are seeking to do work in the area to try and improve the situation for the people in the area, to help young people stay out of trouble.
Okay.
I've visited some of the groups and see the work that they do after school with young people, the enthusiasm that they generate.
We'll have to leave it there, Sammy, because the news is coming up.
And the pride that they try to do. So, I mean, if Anne is saying that I do not pay attention to that area, she is wrong.
Okay, Sammy Wilson, thank you very much indeed. The news coming up next.